This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the 2011 Federal Executive Forum series on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today's program will focus on trusted identities and identity management efforts in the federal government. Here's your host, Jim Fleisig.
Hello, welcome to the show. I'm Jim Fleisig. During today's show, we'll discuss progress being made as we move forward with identity management programs in the federal government. With me today on the show are Jeremy Grant, the Senior Executive Advisor for Identity Management at the National Institute of Standards and Technology, Chase Garwood, the Chief Technology Officer, DHS U.S. Visit Program, Eric Raffin, the Executive Director of Field Operations, VA Office of Information and Technology, Gordon Hanna, Principal at Deloitte & Touche, LLP, and Mike Oxburn, the Principal at Booz Allen Hamilton. We're talking identity management. Let's get right and talk about some progress that's being made. Let's start, Jeremy. I know you're heading up a big program that spans, I guess, the entire country here. So perhaps you can give us some ideas about some progress being made in your particular area.
Sure. Well, I joined government about 8 months ago to head up implementation of a new initiative being driven out of the White House called the National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace, or NSTIC. It was signed by President Obama in April, launched with a big event hosted by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and we've had quite a lot of activity since then focused on the implementation of it. NSTIC is one of the few government ID programs that's actually focused less on, I would say, the government space itself and much more on the average citizen and how we can help them get access to better technologies that they can use to better authenticate themselves online and better secure their transactions. It really is trying to solve three problems. The first is that passwords are really fundamentally broken,
right,
and need
right.
to be upgraded. Most people are managing 25 or 30 passwords. It's completely unwieldy. Even the best ones aren't particularly secure. There's plenty of ways for the bad guys to still get through them. And what we really need to try and do is get the country as a whole to be using stronger technology,
right,
mostly multi-factor types of authentication, in order to crack some of the big problems that are caused by passwords. Just an interesting stat, Verizon and the Secret Service do a study every year on data breaches. They found last year four of the top seven methods of attack used around data breaches were tied one way or another to our reliance on passwords.
Oh, wow.
It's,
okay.
In cybersecurity, you should try to focus on some of the most commonly used vectors of attack. It's pretty clear passwords
right.
is the place you want to start, and some agencies who have successfully gotten away from them have seen some really great results. The second thing we're trying to tackle is that 18 years after the famous New Yorker cartoon was published, where the dog says to his friend the dog
yeah.
on the computer,
anonymity on the internet.
Great thing about the internet is nobody knows you're a dog. That hasn't changed. And, you know, there's times when it's fine to be a dog on the internet, whether you're, you know, just browsing or, you know, leaving say under perhaps a pseudonym, you know, some very polite comments at the end of an article on, say, Federal News Radio.
Right.
But there are times when you actually want to be able to demonstrate that you're not a dog.
Right.
And there's a lot of very interesting transactions that you could move online, both in the government as well as in the commercial sector, if you could better authentically assert your identity.
Right.
And the third thing we're trying to tackle is some improvements in the level of privacy all Americans enjoy when they go online. Right now, you're asked to provide gobs of information for every transaction rather than those specific attributes that are actually necessary to complete the transaction. And we think there's some very interesting solutions that we can help drive the adoption of through NSTIC that will give people more control over their information.
Great. Great program. We'll drill down on some of these things, too, hopefully as the show goes on. But some great stuff there. And I think this program is so important. I think a lot of people don't realize yet the importance of this program and what it will mean to deal with authentication and authenticity on the internet. Chase Garwood, I know when we talk identity management, the U.S. visit immediately comes to mind because I guess you were one of the larger collectors of identities. Can you give us some ideas of some progress being made on the U.S. visit program?
Sure. As you know, U.S. visit has been around since 2003 with the stand-up of the department. We've been doing biometrics and identity services. Since then, we continue to expand supporting multiple agencies across DHS and our partners in other agencies like Department of State and FBI, OPM as well. So we continue to expand that mission demand and expand just the need for biometrics and identity services to provide not only security, but also identity assurance, to protect folks' identities and introduce integrity into the system. It's also been great. We're part of the National Protection and Programs Directorate, which has our cyber security folks. Right. So how does biometrics and identity support the things that are going on with the NSTIC, as well as HSPD-12 and other uses of biometrics? So there's still continued demand, multimodality, so beyond just fingerprints into facial recognition, iris, voice, DNA, et cetera. So it's,
some really good stuff going on there, too. And I know I personally believe that the identity question, if you can solve it, it's going to make a lot of other things a lot simpler. And I know last year we had a U.S. visit, a DOD and FBI, and that talk about how the three organizations, along with State Department, are working together on this stuff. And you know, you really can put together. You know, in fact, we were talking about, you know, should there be like a biometrics as a service thing in the future that can, you know, deal with some of these issues for the entire government.
There's a real potential there, and it's come a long ways from good government and partnerships amongst the agencies.
Yeah, terrific, Gordon Hanna over at Deloitte & Touche. Tell us a little bit about how Deloitte is positioned in helping the government with some of these identity programs.
Sure. We're in the business of actually helping agencies try to comply with some of the initiatives you heard mentioned with Jeremy with the national strategy and another large government initiative called Federal Identity Credential and Access Management, or FICAM. So that's a very broad initiative that the government has undertaken to really get their arms around their management of identity and use of identity within their agencies. And part of that is very strong, the highest level of authentication in the government terminology of level 4, use of identity proofing and issuance of credentials to government employees and contractors. Mm-hmm. And now the agencies are really, I think, over the cusp to celebrate the issuance of those credentials. Really, they're at the 80-90% level. Certainly, Department of Defense, I think, has led the way with their Common Access Card and over 3.5 million active cards in issuance and being used for network access, for building access every day. And a lot of the other agencies that began their programs really in 2004 and began issuance in 2006 now have the critical mass of issuing the credentials, but the real focus now is on using those credentials. So using them, very strong authentication to get onto your networks, to get onto your applications, and also to get into your physical spaces and systems.
Yeah, so the HSPD-12 cards and the credentials, it's and you know, there's a big difference between getting the authentication piece down, the cards issue, and then the next step, which is the privilege that goes along with that identity.
That's
and that you can just use your imagination, especially if you go with an opt-in process for the future, the kinds of things you can do once you solve the authentication issue. Erk Raffin over at VA, when we think of VA, I guess, you know, healthcare, identity, things like that become extremely important in, you know, the privacy issues associated. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing with the identity area.
Sure, thank you. You know, I'm most excited that at the core of our organization over the past several months, we've restated our core values. It spells out the acronym ICARE, and the I in ICARE is integrity. Mm-hmm. And so it's very clear that integrity has always been our minds and how we conduct ourselves and how we handle services for veterans. But when it comes down to identity management, integrity is what we're all about. And as someone who's in the service provider business, and trying to get services through our internal customers, 300,000 plus employees across the country, we're trying to do our best to attract more veterans to own their health. And to own their health, they have to own their health information, and we have lots of it. We've had a very successful rollout of our Blue Button program, but as I think as we've heard from the prior speakers already, the world of passwords is broken. And for me, it's really about layers. You know, how many layers, you know, can we keep forcing folks to comply with in order to get to ultimately what's theirs, which is information about their own health. And we're in the process of rolling through a proof of concept based on the NSTIC construct for us to be able to attract more and more veterans. You know, we're seeing millions of folks every year. We're serving, you know, upwards 25, 30 million veterans in both the healthcare and the benefits realm to be able to own their information. And being able to do that by simplifying and providing a higher level of assurance is what we're on track to do.
Right, I know, and I've heard the arguments, and I've spoken on the subject a number of times. People say, oh, well, we can't have all our information on a card or whatever. And then I quickly point out to them, well, where's your information now? Tell me where your health information is from the time you were born. Where does it exist? And nobody can answer that question. Short of being, unless you're in the military your whole life, maybe you have a clue. But if not, nobody knows where that stuff is. And it's probably in paper form, and who knows. Mike Osborne, you and I have talked on the subject a number of times. I view you as sort of a subject matter expert who's been all over this subject for quite some time. Can you tell us the kinds of things you're involved in with identity management over at Booz Allen Hamilton?
Sure, Jim, thanks. we actually see this as more of a transformation, I think, almost at an internet scale level. What we're really in the midst of is this transformation from kind of an e-commerce model. And if you're as old as I am, you can remember when we all started this off and people didn't think this internet was going to be that big a deal. But over time, we would put this application on the web or that application on the web. And so it was possible to kind of take this siloed approach where I'll roll out one application, I'll have one password, to Jeremy's point, I'll put some security around it, life will be good. In a world of smartphones and social networks, those silos are totally demolished. Mm-hmm. And so I think what we see is the need to transform to kind of a trust architecture. And the point that Eric made is identity is a very important part of that. Privacy is a very important part of that. And I define privacy as that's the information that I care about that you need to protect for me. And then security, that's the information that you're responsible for right. because I don't want to handle it myself.
right.
And so what we're looking at across commercial clients as well as government clients is what we need is a new infrastructure for the individual that the individual can manage, the individual can navigate their way through. And as Jeremy said, go from a transaction where I'm anonymous to a transaction with Eric's VA organization that I can be totally assured that I'm being protected with my health care. That needs to be a seamless, easy to manage right. infrastructure, exactly like the internet today. So right. we're real excited about ranging, you know, projects that range from HSPD-12, PKI, heavy mm-hmm. levels of biometrics, all the way down to OpenID and the ability to easily navigate from one service to another and do it in the same sort of progressive engagement that we've seen on the web.
Yeah, I tell you, you know, I'm really into this programs. If we can get to a point where we can really begin securing, basically the issue we're talking about here is securing the internet. And that would just open up a whole new world of opportunities, things that probably aren't even imagined today. Let's talk about some of the benefits we see coming out of these programs. Let's start with Chase Garber this time. Chase, what are you... I guess cost reduction is an obvious, but you know, what are some of the big benefits you think you achieve as you implement identity management programs?
Well, the obvious one is security. I mean, you're doing better kind of national security, homeland security efforts, at least in our use cases. But also, as we said, you know, integrity into protection of the identity. We've been doing a lot with protection of the travelers' identities in conjunction with the Department of State. So Visa issuance fraud, right. when you are based on paper documents and or somebody going into one consulate saying they're Chase Garwood right. and going into a next consulate or embassy and saying they're John Smith,
right.
that's come to halt with biometrics. So it's not just security for catching bad guys and bad actors, but also security of the entire process. We're also seeing, quite honestly, as we focus on security, but it's also facilitation of processes. So we have certain things, you know, that may fall into the citizen services category
right.
with the global entry system
right.
From CBP for international registered traveler. That actually helps facilitate trade and travel and ease of getting through processes by using better identity, better biometrics, and facilitating right. that process.
Right. So we get the two benefits. One, we catch the bad guys. But number two, we make it easier for the good guys and right. the cargo and things like that to move across in better processes.
Exactly.
Yeah, great. Eric, what do you think in terms of some of the benefits you see being achieved as you implement these solutions?
You know, one of our goals, I think, is simplicity and getting to that point where, you know, we have, you know, millions of clients who don't want to go through a laborious process to get access to what's their information. And in order to do that, I think we have to evolve past that hard, crusty exterior of security that we've all talked
right.
about for so long and move past those layers, build relationships, and actually engage in those trusting relationships, while at the same time still being pretty rigid internally. You know, we're in the process of implementing, you know, strong authentication credentials for the folks who administer, who have elevated privileges on our most critical systems. And, you know, in my opinion, we can't get to that point where we can make it simpler for the veteran to get access to his or her information unless we're also, on the flip side, internally, right, you know, really enhancing what we're doing. And that goes against that soft inside and the crusty outside that has been a view in security for a number of years. You know, we're hardening inside, and in some ways, at least for the customer, softening, right, on the outside. And I'm, right, looking forward to that.
Yeah, I think that's exactly correct. I mean, I want to be the first one to sign up when we have an easier way to access things, because, you know, we can come up with secure remote access, but sometimes it's an extremely burdensome process to go through all the VPN setups and everything else that needs to be done. So once we get to this point, it's going to make life easier, and we won't have to have our passwords written down on those little yellow stickies that we put on our keyboards to remember them all. Jeremy, what do you think in terms of benefits, the key benefits you see coming out of the program?
You know, I'd say outside of security, there's really three things I'd focus on. The first is cost savings. You know, at a time when we're, you know, really in a period of fiscal austerity in the country, agencies can't keep affording to be building these one-off siloed identity management systems over and over again. And so starting to rely on other trusted credentials that are accredited, the cost savings can be significant. NIH, for example, has for a couple of years now been federating with both a number of research universities along with commercial providers like Google and PayPal. They're saving about $1 million a year, which they're able to plow back into, you know, reinvesting in other core programs. The second is you can really increase citizen participation at government websites. You know, think about how many times you may go online and you're suddenly asked to create a new account and you say, you know, I just don't want to bother. The federal government does that to its constituents all the time.
Right.
And if we can reduce friction by allowing them to reuse a credential, we can really increase citizen participation online. And the third is, I think that, you know, as Eric was talking about, a new range of services that you can enable online. When you look at what the VA is trying to do in terms of allowing the veteran to really take more control over their health care and their health information, if you can come up with better trusted credentials, you now have an easy way for them to access it that isn't there today. And so whether it's in electronic health records or, you know, services that other agencies are going to offer, I think there's a whole new range of transactions that governments at both the federal and state and local levels can move online with trusted identities.
Yeah, I think you're right, too. A lot of individuals, you know, I do it all the time. I go online and you want to do something. For the next thing they ask you is to enter an account, your name and address and all that. No, I don't have time to do that, you know. And then so you wind up not doing whatever it was you initially intended to do. I want to hear from both our private industry panelists on this, too, but we're going to take a short break. You're listening to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Looking for tips to re-energize your agency's IT approach? Deloitte's top 10 technology trends share lessons from the front line, from real analytics to capability clouds to cybersecurity. Challenge conventional thinking and discover new pathways to efficiency, performance, and innovation. To download the report, visit Deloitte.com/federal. That's Deloitte.com/federal. Deloitte, helping government help America.
Today, computer attacks are more frequent, distributed, easy to mount, persistent, and disruptive than ever before. Some sectors are doing a better job than others in proactively addressing these concerns, though most do so following an attack. Booz Allen Hamilton believes that incentives which may or may not currently exist can stimulate greater corporate investment in proactive cybersecurity protection measures. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
Welcome back to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jim Fleisig here with Jeremy Grant from NIST, Chase Garwood from U.S. Visit, Eric Raffin from VA, Gordon Hanna from Deloitte & Touche LLP, and Mike Osborne from Booz Allen Hamilton. We're talking identity management. When we went to break, we had heard from our government panelist here about some of the benefits they see. Let's get some ideas from our industry guest. Mike, how about from your perspective, what do you see some of the biggest benefits that will come out of these programs for government or the country in general?
Well, I'd echo what all the panelists said, the government panelists said. I think it really falls into three categories. One, the ability to impose what I call digital discipline. So through any kind of process and any kind of today paper-based system, it's very, very difficult to manage a paper-based system through manual processes, whether you're the VA, whether you're Medicare, Medicaid, whether you're the IRS. You're talking about tens and hundreds of millions of documents being processed by hand in 2011. And if you could instead, by simply identifying the individual and allowing them to digitally sign a document, as a matter of fact, and transmit it through there, we could take a big hit out of this $125 billion a year in improper payments, which is our way to say we made a mistake, whether we paid too much or paid too little. So I think digital discipline, number one, is a key thing that gets to the cost reduction. I think mission effectiveness is the second one, and Eric talked about it. You know, we want to provide better services to the millions and millions of people in this country who are already totally connected. And so that impediment, that inability to serve people in the same way that they're already ready to take and accept a service is a big impediment for us. So I think the ability to expand the effectiveness of the mission that you're providing. And I think third, ease of use and just customer service and that integration, that same person that is that we would call a customer in the commercial setting is a constituent in the government setting.
Right.
It's the same person. They should be able to engage with their service providers in a similar way, and particularly as in healthcare and energy and financial services, there's a very blurry line between when am I engaged at the front end of a service that primarily is provided by the government or maybe secondarily provided by the government, and why should that experience be different? So I think those three benefits, the ability to move to a common approach, and then to Jeremy's point, if that can be built on this new trusted architecture, so that that same experience across the web is also secure across the web, then we've really achieved something.
Yeah, that's great. I like the way you phrase that, put that together, and I think you're right. We read every day about all the fraud inherent in some of the large entitlement programs and everything else, and everybody's trying to reduce the cost of those programs. Well, getting a lot of the fraud out of them through authentication and identity would be a great move forward that I think, and I think everybody would agree that that's a good idea. We wouldn't have the bickering back and forth about whether it's a good idea or not. Gordon over at Deloitte, it's always difficult to be the last when you're talking benefits because it's almost like, well, ditto, but what are some of the things that you might come to mind that you might be able to add there that you see as benefits accruing from these programs?
Yeah, Jim, I guess to follow the trend and look at groups of threes for benefits, we really think security is, you know, one of the main ones, compliance and generating cost savings. So you've heard from the panelists really on the security and the return. I'll spend a little time on compliance. I think we have a lot of folks who have issues in both their security and financial audits, and these types of technologies and systems actually help address those. There was a stat I heard the other day that close to half of all breaches actually come from insider threats. These types of technologies will actually help address some of the security issues around insider threats as well. And we also see a lot of our clients spend a lot of time bringing folks into an organization, whether they be full-time employees or contractors, and when they're done with their work, leaving the organization and the security gaps that can come with that, along with the wasted time. So really streamlining those processes and onboarding, conducting background checks in a very, very timely manner and giving folks their appropriate credentials and access becomes a very important item. I think you heard about the digital signature. We think that's a very powerful capability when you think of all the paper we move around today
in society.
Just
think how many times you write your name somewhere.
In the ability to digitally sign. So I know a lot of folks are actively working on getting the right policy and guidance in around digital signature. And then one of the other big ones, based on the traffic we have in the D.C. area, the telework capability. So to actually remotely come in and be able to work from home on certain days could be a big benefit to us who sit in traffic every day. And then just hitting on the savings, by knowing your folks who are accessing your infrastructure, we've actually seen organizations save on things like software licenses, so the number of seats you have to pay for. So really, if you can do all those three things and actually make it more convenient for the individual users, I think you've got a real winning solution.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's some great points you just laid out there. And, you know, in that cost savings, I read somewhere that the most profitable hospital in the country last year was one that they credited it to go into identity management for everything. They had, you know, they had like RFID tags on beds and medicines and things and individuals. And at first, there was a lot of resistance from the employees feeling like, oh, wait a minute, everyone's gonna know where I am all the time. But over time, they love it. And they think they've reduced the cost dramatically for their business processes and so forth. So I think there's a lot to it, the things you're talking about there and improving the processes down the road. Let's talk about the things that are difficult to do and some of the challenges that are out there and some of the things that still have to be overcome to really get to where we want to go with this. So what do you think are some of the major challenges we still need to overcome? Let's start with Eric this time at the VA. What are some of the tough things for you that you're still trying to overcome to get to where you want to go on this?
I think the one that sticks out for me the most, and it's back again on trying to get more veterans engaged, is education. And education from the perspective of, can I provide the level of assurance and the comfort and the ability to, or the feeling to be able to go online and feel comfortable that your identity is protected and your information is protected, and then I can get that to you. And I think that's difficult when you're trying to reach out to a vast population.
Sure.
And there are a lot of cohorts. You know, we have folks, you know, like myself, who can remember being in graduate school and loading the first version of Netscape and wondering what on earth downloading an image was.
Right.
To folks who are, you know, obviously senior citizens who, you know, I came in today to the studio in a taxi, and the taxi driver doesn't own a cell phone,
right,
doesn't have a computer. But I want, you know, and he's a veteran, I want that individual to be able to find a comfortable way,
right,
even if it's at a public library and a public computer, to be able to have the right credentials, to be able to be proofed and authenticated to get that information. And for me, it all gets back to having the right educational campaign.
Yeah, I think education awareness is a big deal, especially, I mean, but I think as new generations enter the workforce, that will change. You know, I mean, I know my kids right now. I mean, they're all over. They've got every device there is, and they steal my upgrades every time one's available. So, Jeremy, what do you think? Some of the big challenges, some of the difficult things yet that need to be done. I know the budget climate is one that looms out there, and the uncertainty associated with it. But other than the budget situation, what are some of the other tough things?
Yeah, well, I'm actually less worried about the budget and more about four key topics that I think we need to make some progress on. First is interoperability, the second is privacy, the third is liability, and the fourth is usability. Let me talk about each real quick. Interoperability, there's a lot of different authentication solutions that are out there in the identity management space. We've got some standards that are in place right now to ensure interoperability, but really not at the level that we're going to need to have going forward, particularly as we start talking about how the computing environment is changing, where we're moving towards more mobile devices. You know, Eric and I were talking, you know, before the show started about the VA's plan to start moving forward with a number of tablet computers, things like the iPad. Well, that, you know, raises a big question. We've got a federal mandate to log into your computers with a smart card, and there's no slot in the iPad to insert it. So we're going to need to address that. Privacy, I think, both in the government as well as we get into the consumer space with stronger credentials, if you've got different firms that are playing the role of identity provider, what information are they going to collect on you? How can they use it? How can they disclose it? We don't have great rules of the road today, and we need to have some that are in place that are really going to protect consumers and give them more choice and control over how their information is used. Liability is real simple. What happens when something goes wrong in one of these systems, particularly in the commercial space? It's been pointed out, if you look at things like the bank card network, we've got things like Reg E and Reg Z. So if my credit card's stolen, I'm only accountable as a consumer for up to $50, mm-hmm, and the bank pays a certain amount and the merchant pays a certain amount. We don't have any certainty there in the identity space. And the fourth is usability. A lot of the technologies that are out there today as alternative to passwords can be a little clunky. People don't necessarily want to have to carry around another token with them.
Right.
They haven't been widely adopted, I think, in part because there's some usability challenges. The amount of innovation I'm seeing with new, strong authentication technologies built around smartphones and the mobile platform is really fascinating right now, and I think it's going to provide a way to overcome some of those usability challenges from the past.
Yeah, great points there, too. Also, I know liability. I know DHS faced that in the early days, too, and come up with the Safety Act to try to give some kind of insurance, if you will, to someone who is, you know, whose products could be used in the wrong way. And you're right about privacy. I think it's going to be important to make sure that that's hit right up front because, you know, one mistake in that area can quickly bring a program to its knees. Chase Garwood, what do you think are some of the hard things yet, big challenges you're trying to overcome to get where you want to go?
Three things. One is somewhat the technology. Mm-hmm. As we continue to scale at the levels we're talking about when we're talking identity and biometrics, what is the technology that's able to do that from large system, large transactions, and multimodality, right, and all those features. Number two, just to echo Jeremy, it's when biometrics, and we started back in 2003, there were no national level around the world scale programs of identity and biometrics. Right. Now, in 2011, across the international spectrum, governments are starting to use biometrics and identity for various purposes, right, whether or not it's border control or citizen services or for their financial systems. You know, look at India. Right. That's a scale that will be very interesting to, right, to watch. makes us look small in comparison. Mm-hmm. And to echo the privacy, you know, in that international ecosystem with identity and biometrics, what is the privacy considerations in there? And one of the things that the U.S. Visit has been successful since the very beginning, we established privacy and security at the very, you know, the very front. Right. We have a dedicated privacy officer at our program level. We have a privacy officer at a National Protection and Programs Directorate level, and we have the DHS privacy officer. As a matter of fact, this is our Privacy Awareness Week, right, that we're doing a lot of cyber biometrics and identity work this week. So that privacy in an international ecosystem, not just a domestic, is going to be, I think, challenges to go forward.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, and you hear the privacy, you know, government, big brother, this, that, you know, thing. But what I observe is in just about every government program, there is somebody dealing with privacy right up front, you know, I think in it. So, you know, when you think about, in my mind anyway, when I think about privacy, it's not the government programs. I think a lot like the credit industry and credit cards, all that other stuff that's out there that needs that. Hopefully Jeremy's programs will be addressing some of those issues too. Gordon, how about from your perspective, what are the hard things, challenges, things that you got to get overcome to get to where you think we need to go?
Yeah, with identity programs, I group it into two key areas to kind of coin the phrase from the nuclear strategic reduction talks.
Right.
Trust is the first area. So yeah, we're really talking about trust in credentials being presented and the ability to trust those credentials. So that means frameworks, standards have to be adhered to. There have to be capabilities to audit organizations that are issuing those credentials to make sure they comply with all the guidelines and rule sets, if mm-hmm. you will. And then the second piece is the verify. So if you think about how we get on planes today in airports and we right. present our driver's license, all that's happening today is really a visual inspection.
Right, and presumption of that driver's license is valid.
That's right. Well, so what we're talking about now is a transformation into the ability to more or less validate the validity of that credential electronically right. and in real time. So we're moving past the age of what I call the flash pass and the ability to actually authenticate what's being presented. And typically, you have to go back to whoever issued it and check with them.
Right.
And that ability requires infrastructure. So that's a key area for us that we're looking for as we move into a more federated world where we're trusting credentials that were really issued by other organizations and now are being presented to someone to trust them for a transaction.
Right. Yeah. Very good. Good point. Yeah, I know for years we've been dealing with, you know, how does the enrollment process work? Remember, we were going to have PKI everywhere and everybody's going to have this. And then the question is, where do you go to get your verified identity? But I think now with some of the things that NISTIC's addressing and all, there are ways to, you know, secure, to positively identify individuals without having an onerous process of like standing in line somewhere and waiting for hours to be the next one in. Mike Osborne, what do you think are some of the really tough things, Mike, that you're trying to do, things you got to get accomplished before you're actually going to get where you want to be?
So I'll be the heretic as I sit on, obviously, my last panel in this environment, in this community. But I think it comes down to it's leadership.
Okay.
Because I think all the issues that we're seeing, the framework for the solution is there. And I think I would especially look at the work that Jeremy's doing in terms of both here, and we're seeing in the UK and elsewhere, the leadership has said this needs to be led by the marketplace. This needs to be a solution that we can deliver to individuals. And it will then be a rollout model much more like an internet product than like a government mandate. And I think seeing leaders, and we've seen them at the VA, we've seen them at Medicare, Medicaid. I mean, so this is going on. I don't right. mean to be a criticism, but I think we have to support the leaders who are embracing that vision. In the UK, they call it digital by default.
Right.
And they've looked at that and they've said, you know what, we have these budget constraints and we need to recognize it's 2011. Our citizens are already connected. We don't have to pay for them to be connected. We don't have to train them to do these things. What we need to do is present a better benefit for them. And I'll give you two examples of what I mean by that. In roughly the same time period back in the early 2000s, two initiatives began. One was an initiative to better identify our armed forces. And so we started that program early in the 2000s, and 10 years later, plus or minus, we've got common access cards, we've got PIV cards, we've got PIV-I cards, and maybe on our best day we've issued 20 million or so, and it's cost us quite a lot of money. And sometimes they work, and sometimes not so much. There was another initiative started about the same time in a really complicated technology environment that was very confusing with lots of different software, lots of different hardware, lots of different standards. It's just as complex as everything we're talking about. And then there's this little company that said, if you'd like to listen to digital music, here's a way to do it, and it's called an iPod. Roughly the same timetable. 10 years later, more than 250 million iPods have been purchased by individuals,
right,
not paid for by the government.
Right.
And that gave rise to the iPhone. And as the guy that put a browser on a cell phone in 1999, when everyone said, you're an idiot because no one will ever do email on a cell phone,
right,
when they got that right, we now have smartphones with a common new experience called an app, whether it's on a BlackBerry or an Android or an iPhone. And those same hundreds of millions of people have no problem understanding the difference between the two. And that's given rise to iPads and a new frame of digital publishing. And what we're seeing is if the market is allowed to move forward, and if we focus on the benefit to the consumers will pull this out.
Right.
And I think that's the message back to leadership inside government agencies, mm-hmm, is you've got the right model. The technology will get worked out.
Right.
Allow it to move forward. And my last example on that is in the identity space, look at what Facebook has done.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the good news and the bad news. They decided that it was too hard to go to a new website and log in. And they were losing lots of money commercially with advertising, with all sorts of things. And they said, we've got a big community. We'll make it easy to let you go to that other website, use your Facebook ID to register over at that other website, and it'll streamline registration and login. It's not secure. It does not protect your privacy. It does not protect your identity. And by the way, we own all that information about you here at Facebook.
Right.
Right? It's called Facebook Connect. Notwithstanding all those limitations, it's on more than 2.5 million websites now, and it's used by more than 250 million people every month to accomplish one simple benefit: make it easier for me to register and log in.
Right.
If we take that same model and apply what Jeremy's doing with NSTIC, what FICAM has done, we're going to see that kind of adoption. So I think there's lots of impediments. There's lots of mess in this thing. We're talking about hundreds of millions of services and billions of people. But at the end of the day, there's a simple proven path on how we can do it. And it boils down to, when can leadership inside government embrace that new model and be willing to drive it through all the impediments and challenges that they're going to face,
right,
and how we in the commercial set can help them?
Yeah, that's excellent points there, and I think you're exactly right. If you have that many people for ease of use signing up today in the unsecured way, just think if you can add security without adding a difficult, complex process on top of it. I mean, what a difference will that make? And I think the leadership, you know, I mean, that's what I like about the NISTIC program, is the fact that, you know, it is being pushed out there now. And, in this town now, there's not a whole lot of agreement on a whole lot of things, but I do think there's agreement that we need to do a better job with cybersecurity and identity management. And I think I don't see big fights going on over whether they're important topics or not. They are. So I think you make some excellent points. And I also think you're right. I mean, government has a role, but that role is more of steering, not rowing. You know, get out there and push the priority, but allow the industry to make it happen and take off. We're going to switch and talk a little. Someone brought up interoperability. I want to talk a little bit about interoperability, and then listening to Mike talk here, it inspires me. We need to talk about the future and what the future is all going to mean. So we're going to do that when we come back, but first we're going to take a break. You're listening to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, computer attacks are more frequent, distributed, easy to mount, persistent, and disruptive than ever before. Some sectors are doing a better job than others in proactively addressing these concerns, though most do so following an attack.
Booz Allen Hamilton believes that incentives which may or may not currently exist can stimulate greater corporate investment in proactive cybersecurity protection measures. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
Looking for tips to re-energize your agency's IT approach? Deloitte's top 10 technology trends share lessons from the front line, from real analytics to capability clouds to cybersecurity. Challenge conventional thinking and discover new pathways to efficiency, performance, and innovation. To download the report, visit Deloitte.com/federal. That's Deloitte.com/federal. Deloitte, helping government help America.
Welcome back to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jim Fleisig here with Jeremy Grant from NIST, Chase Garwood from U.S. Visit, Eric Raffin from VA, Gordon Hanna from Deloitte and Touche, and Mike Osborne from Booz Allen Hamilton. We're talking identity management. We've talked about benefits. We've talked about some of the challenges yet, and interoperability came up as one of the big challenges. Jeremy, how are you thinking about the interoperability issue since your focus is sort of, you know, outside of the government space, and then we've got some others here that are working inside the government space? How's this all going to, in the end, try to come together?
Sure. Well, you know, to be clear, what NSIC is looking at is both outside and in. Well, our primary focus, I think, is really looking more at the consumer space and how to help individuals across the country get access to more secure, interoperable credentials. The government's got to be an early adopter. That's something that we've heard from industry. And so we spent a tremendous amount of time working very closely with the folks who are running Federal Identity Credential and Access Management Initiative, FICAM, over GSA that Gordon mentioned before. FICAM really represents the .gov embodiment of NSTIC. It is the set of standards and rules that will allow today the government to accept a lot of different externally issued credentials. And so working closely with them, it really provides a foundation not just for government to look at, but also potentially some of the commercial sector as well. I think we've got standards right now at a lower level of assurance. You know, if you're talking just about using username and passwords that are issued by external providers interoperably, I think at a higher level of assurance, when you start to get to more robust security technologies, there really is a lot of work to be done, both in government and the private sector. I will tell you right now, as you know, we embraced a part of our role as a National Program Office of NSTIC that's coordinating different interagency activity. It's really clear that whether you're looking at the VA or Social Security or the IRS or the Department of Education, there are a lot of killer apps that agencies are working to move online that they can't do without actually having some sort of strong two-factor authentication. Right. And one thing we're trying to do is ensure that every agency doesn't build a solution in a silo. One, we can't afford to do so.
Right.
Two, it's not going to make much sense for the citizen that if I'm a veteran who's a taxpayer and a college student, if I need to obtain a separate credential from the VA and the IRS and the Department of Education in order to do business with each of them at all.
We don't want to walk around town with 15 cards in our pocket.
We're trying to avoid that. So, you know, one idea that, you know, we've put out there is it may be time to create what we've dubbed the Federal Cloud Identity Exchange that could actually be a cloud-based service that could parse different credentials issued by different agencies. So VA is going to get out there first with offering veterans stronger credentials to get online. Why can't the IRS leverage that and trust that? Why can't the federal student aid portion of the Department of Education trust that? We could really improve citizen services and achieve interoperability very quickly with something like that.
That's a great idea. That dovetails right into the biometrics as a service. You have the identity as a service and biometrics as a service. Boy, we could solve on all. Why don't we five guys just get together and make it happen when we finish here today, you know? Chase, what do you think for interoperability as you? I know you're working closely with FBI, DOD, and other, but, you know, how about other aspects of folks, stakeholders that have to interoperate or work with you as Visit?
Well, that's interesting. As I think Mike said, it's the technology is easy. It's the processes, it's the people, and it's the portfolio management and getting folks together. And as you mentioned, we've got great partnerships with FBI and DOD and Department of State.
Right.
A lot of building blocks there for a federal biometric private cloud and services. I mean, we're already doing that for OPM and elsewhere. How do we do that with an international scale? How do we do that as citizen services and offering that up? I think it is in the standards community. I mean, we're working NIEM, so the National Information Exchange Model, with NIST on the ANSI NIST standards. So when we're using biometrics and identity, which then plays into FIPS, plays into the FICAM standards so that we can all interoperate, and the industry, when they're building solutions, whether or not it's biometric capture devices to back-end systems engineering, how are we able to actually easily mash up solutions and plug and play as needed. So that's where we're going.
It's a good point too about industry, because you know, as you know, over time, let's face it, it's going to mobility is going to become a bigger and bigger issue. So it's not just going to be interoperability of you know, algorithms or whatever is being used for the identity and authentication card, but we're going to have, you know, the whole broadband issue and interoperability of wireless communications, and all those issues are going to play in here too. Eric, how about OVA? How do you viewing that interoperability issue as you're moving forward here to make sure that, as Jeremy said, you don't have, you know, a solution for the VA, but just for the VA?
Sure. Well, and that's just it. It's for me, I view it as we work, even you know, it's been in the news, you know, our interagency partnership with the Department of Defense, our work in Chicago at the James A. Lovell Federal Healthcare Center, where we've been looking at how do I bring identities and systems, both ends, bring the data and the users together so that they can interoperate in a single healthcare facility. It takes vision, and it takes a perspective that the way that I've done it before may have been outstanding, but we have to continuously improve and enhance. And I think sometimes that's difficult, because when we complete a program, you know, we implement a project and we plant the flag in the ground, we like to say we did it. Right. But this is an environment that is very dynamic, and it's always going. We're always going to have to be shooting for something higher and better, faster, stronger than we have. And I think that that's going to mean that large organizations such as VA and DOD, who are committed to bringing this better, enhanced experience, not just for veterans, but also for all of the healthcare professionals that are associated with the services we provide, we're going to have to keep that vision focused, you know, two or three steps ahead. And if we can do that, the technology, you know, as several people have said, is not the weakest link.
Yeah, right. It's well, there's 73 shows in a row now where somebody has said the technology is not the most difficult issue. I mean, so we're consistent with that one, and with no matter what the subject is, by the way. We've got about 12 minutes left, and I really want each of you to have an opportunity to lay out sort of your vision for the future here. So, you know, we've got if let's move to the future, the world we're going to be living in down the road. You know, on a broader scale, what will this all mean? I mean, we are hearing about the benefits and challenges today, but what will this mean to the country, the world, the citizens, services, and so forth as we think down the road? So put on your, you know, your future hat and look into your crystal ball and give us some ideas of some of the things that will come out of this. Let's start with Mike Osborne at the Booz Allen Hamilton. Mike, what do you see? Where's this all going in the future, and what will it mean for our country?
So my 90-second future of the world is...
You got it.
I think what we'll see, and the patterns are even set, I think we'll see a shift where the focus will be on the service that's being provided to the individual. So whether you think of that as a use case, whether you think that as a service, we're going to focus on how can I make your life better using this trusted architecture as the basis to do that. So Jeremy pointed to the example at NIH. I think what we're seeing with the blue button at VA, that pattern has been established. The agencies are doing it for their own employees. The issue is we need to change our focus from the 20 million employees to the 250 million people in America that need to get that benefit. And I think what you'll see is that, as we've seen with everything else, by focusing on a great service, we'll get great adoption. And by focusing on the benefit, people will pull these enablers out. We don't have to push the enablers. We need to push the benefit. We need to offer up the benefit. And I think we'll see that shift. And as we see that shift, I think what will happen is that we'll move to this new common environment in the same way we've moved all these web services. And, you know, I go back to the long-distance world when I was with a company, when we broke up the phone company.
Right.
I'm old enough to remember that. And that was a big deal. We thought it was a big, gigantic deal for about 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. My kids have no idea what I'm talking about,
right?
Because you just make a phone call, right? And I think we're going to do that same thing. We'll go through this great big childbirth, and then we'll use these trusted credentials in a trusted architecture, and people look back and go, what was a password? And what was the big deal? So I think when we shift that focus, when we get leadership to align around the platform, the framework that's already there, with what FICAM's done, with what they've done in the federal enterprise architecture, with what Jeremy's doing, with what private companies are doing. The framework is there. We just have to get moving.
Yeah, exciting stuff. I agree. Boy, I'll tell you, I think this issue is just so much bigger than people realize in terms of what it can enable in terms of opening up a whole new world of creativity and innovation and new ideas. Over at VA, Eric Raffin, what do you think, or what's your future look like? Where's this all going to go? Am I going to be able to walk into all the various doctors I go to and just scan my card and not fill out 2,000 forms every or per year?
And perhaps you wouldn't even need a card.
There you go.
Know, I think you know, specifically in the healthcare space, we always hear healthcare researchers saying, if I only had more longitudinal information, all of the health information that somebody can bring with them when they have an issue, when they have an unexpected illness, when they show up in the emergency room. These are tremendous weaknesses, and they put our healthcare professionals, and not just in VA, this is really, you know, a global issue, at a disadvantage. Because they just don't know what's going on. They don't know your history. And we've taken, you know, what in the grand scheme, I guess, are small steps, but I think they're large steps at making our systems that have all of this longitudinal information chat with one another and be able to provide sort of on-demand communications. But we're consumers. I have an iPhone. I walk around. I still have 50 passwords on that thing. I have a password wallet because I'll never remember all the passwords. When we get to that point where I don't need the password wallet and where, you know, when I show up, I can get that access, we will have worked out the data stuff on the back end as far as providing the longitudinal healthcare information. And for us, that provides not just from a medical research perspective, but an on-the-spot, I've had, a catastrophic incident occur. Immediately, I don't have to, you know, have a paramedic. I was an EMT for a number of years. I don't have to have a paramedic sift through a shopping bag full of medications. I've got it right here.
It's all right there.
It's right there. I know all your allergies. I know when you had surgery. I know that you don't have a kidney on your right side. These are the type of things that healthcare professionals, we can reduce adverse consequences when we have it. And I think we're totally going to get there.
Right. So you're basically saying we're saving lives. I mean, that's how
Correct.
Important this issue is.
Yes.
Gordon Hanna over at Deloitte & Touche, LLC, LLP. Would you give us, how's it look to you? Where's this all going?
Yeah, I think we've heard a couple of the key components today. Mobile is one, and cloud, I think, is another, where we recently did a online webinar on what we call identity as a service. And I think of those kinds of initiatives combined really to be able to offer identity as a service. And we had a large number of folks turn out. And the interesting part to us is we did some polling questions. And one of the key areas we looked at was, you know, we talked a little bit about Jeremy's national strategy and whether or not it would benefit the nation, essentially. And over half of the respondents felt his initiative could benefit them.
Yeah.
So it's also an area where I think the federal government is providing very strong leadership through the NSTIC and FICAM initiatives you heard today. I think that we're going to move to a world of what I consider dynamic access control. So for the ability for applications and relying parties to make real-time decisions based on a variety of factors, sometimes called attributes or privileges. So really to make those decisions in real time, to have a choice of what types of technologies and tools I use as a consumer to verify my identity, to give me that choice, and also to introduce things like what I call identity history. So one of the key challenges of 9/11 is we didn't have a lot of identity history
right.
on the attackers. So really moving into that realm where we can look at identity history and we can look at real risk and prevent things like these large breaches. So
right.
real control over data is well tied to the identity.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I see things.
Yeah, very good. Back to that point, you know, well, not only we can use it to solve real problems and security problems and catch bad guys, if you will, but on the other hand, we can make life a lot easier and services much improved, privacy improved for individuals. Chase Garwood, what's it look like in your crystal ball? Where's this all going down the road?
I'm a big fan of mobility. I think mobility is going to be key, and I think biometrics built into that mobility. We're seeing commercial products coming out right now with voice and facial on smartphones so that when you make that easy to use, when it's not an extra dongle or sled or other
right.
things, I think that's going to help provide capability and innovation for a lot of different things. I mean, we're looking at Apple and Siri just came out. That's not using voice recognition for security yet, but that's some interesting things. You know, Android's doing some similar things, facial recognition with Facebook. So when that's built in the mobile device where your data is coming with you no matter what, how do you make sure that it is you and you authenticate non-repudiation and just facilitation? I think that's going to open up a whole road of innovation with mobility and biometrics and better identity built in.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's some excellent points made there too. Jeremy, I guess when we talk vision for the future, you've got sort of a program here that's all about, in some essence, creating that vision and making it a reality in a lot of different ways when you think of the scope of what you're looking at. What do you see? Where do you see all this going? What's it going to look like in the future?
Sure. Well, first of all, just to slightly correct Gordon, talk about it as my strategy. It's not its president's strategy. President Obama signed it in April. I think it's worth noting in that it really underscores the government's commitment to actually tackling this for the country. When the topic of identity becomes enough of a national priority that you actually need a presidential strategy that gets the government as a whole marching in the same direction, I think it really speaks a lot both to where we're going as well as to the commitment of the government right now to helping solve this problem. What we're really trying to create through NSTIC is what's dubbed an identity ecosystem, which is an environment where individuals and organizations can choose from a variety of different technologies to more easily authenticate online in a way that will enhance privacy, enhance choice, and enhance security. And the way that you can choose from a variety of different technologies is by adherence to common set of standards and policies. That's a big reason why NIST is actually leading the implementation of it, is working in consultation and in partnership with the private sector on standards and best practices is what we do. So the identity ecosystem is the vision of the future. I think it's where we're going to get actually within 2 or 3 years, and I'm excited about where we're going.
Yeah, I think it is exciting. I hope the momentum keeps up. I think it's sort of important that all of us try to keep this in the forefront and the awareness up and keep the so that we don't lose the momentum. You know, sometimes we're proactive, sometimes we're reactive. And I would argue that a lot of programs, especially in the cybersecurity world, we've been reactive. We wait for something bad to happen or something to break and then we fix it. But I think this, what we're hearing today from the panelists, is the need to be proactive. Let me take the last minute or so we've got left here and try to do some summaries. It's always a challenge here, but as we're talking, I try to jot down a few things I'm hearing. One thing that we do talked about early on is this is about transformation. This is about transformation to a whole new world of opportunities. This is about adding the security to the internet and the authenticity to the internet. We talk quite a bit about the benefits, not just the cost benefits, but participation, ease of use, enablement. The term digital discipline came out. I thought that was an excellent point, as well as improving mission effectiveness. So we're not only, you know, solving problems, but we're actually making vast improvements in mission effectiveness. We did hear about education and awareness being an important issue that needs to be dealt with, because we have varieties of people with, you know, if you take privacy, you know, every individual probably in this room has a different idea of what privacy means to them. So it has to be dealt with from that point of view. I also heard a lot of conversation about leadership and the importance of leadership and a government role to steer, but maybe not row. Private sector can get the technologies in place. In terms of some of the challenges, we heard about interoperability, privacy, usability, liability, those kinds of things, but they're all being addressed. And I would argue that they're not barriers, they're just challenges, and challenges you can solve. And then we talked about the future, and I think we got a lot of point there, and I like that focus on the individual, where the individual will have choice to opt in and use these things, and new creative approaches are likely to come out. I also like the fact that we're moving to a world of real time. You know, some people say we're going to be living in the fifth dimension, you know, where time equals zero. You know, the world where time equals zero and decisions have to be made instantaneously. I mean, think about it in the event of a terrorist attack. I mean, you're not going to have time to think about it. You're going to have to respond spontaneously. And so with that, I think we've got some exciting stuff here. I first want to thank all our panelists from taking time from your busy schedules. It's an honor to have such subject matter experts here to talk to this subject, because it is such an important subject. Thanks, too, to the sponsors, without which we can't do the show. Federal News Radio, of course, and all the great people out here. And thanks, most importantly, to our listening audience out there. You've been listening to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Thank you for listening to the 2011 Federal Executive Forum series on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This show was produced by the Trezza Media Group and the Fleisig Group. If you missed any portion of this show, you can listen to it in its entirety and on demand at federalnewsradio.com.